Last year's playoffs were a feast for Victor Hovland. He won the BMW Championship and the Tour Championship to take home the FedEx Cup title. This year has been more like a famine, but the world number 8 is showing signs of a turnaround. He's going to join us from Denver, where he's defending his title. Another man who's had great success in the playoffs over the years is also stopping by. Former world number 1 Jason Day. He's barely inside the top 30 who make the finale next week at Eastlake. We're going to find out how he's approaching a week on the bubble. And the Payne Stewart Award honours those players who conduct themselves with class inside the ropes and give back outside. And by that measure, this year's recipient is thoroughly deserving, Brant Snedeker. He's also just been named a Ryder Cup assistant captain. We'll chat with him as Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
Welcome into Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch alongside George Savarikas. George, BMW Championship getting underway in Denver tomorrow, PGA Tour playoffs. The playoffs are familiar at this stage. The venue used to be familiar on the PGA Tour, Castle Pines Golf Course, but the last time that was a PGA Tour venue, you were in short pants.
This is way back in the day, 2006, but it had a 21-year run from 1986 to 2006. Our colleague John Cook, a winner back in the day, Phil Mickelson. You saw a lot of big-name players used to play in this event. It was part of the staple on the summer schedule on the PGA Tour, and having been out to Castle Pines a number of years ago, I mean, the scenery, the course, spectacular. Clubhouse is off the charts. They were the originator of the milkshakes that you now see at Muirfield Village for the Memorial. They've spent a lot of money on a course renovation as well as clubhouse to get ready for this event. The Colorado Golf Market, it's been 10 years since they had the BMW Championship there at Cherry Hill. So I think the combination of the fan support that we're going to see, and the fact that we had Rory McIlroy and other players, Rory McIlroy notably said he's carrying his driver 390 because they're playing
it. What were you carrying yours, George? Give us a number.
A little different, but it's a nice bump for a guy who's, you know, just slaps it around like myself. But to see 400-yard tee shots on the PGA Tour doesn't happen. So you're going to see things this week in Denver that you won't see anywhere else on the PGA Tour.
So you're saying you didn't get to 400, George?
And maybe with my second shot. Not quite four bills off the tee there, Eamon.
That's pretty good, though.
Yeah. So we got Scottie Scheffler, who's, of course, one of the favorites coming into this week. Still has that top spot in the FedEx Cup standings. And what a sensational season it's been so far. After he won at Bay Hill, remember that closing Sunday, headed to Players. Final round 64 to become the first ever player to win back-to-back, successfully defend his title. And at the Masters, the second time that Scottie Scheffler has slipped on the green jacket, 3 years, second career major victory, and Scheffler was off and running. Remember, that was a 4 wins in a 5-start span now for the season. 17 starts, 6 wins, the numbers that jump out to me. 16 top 25s and 15 top 10s. Eamon, he's only had 2 starts in which he didn't finish in the top 10.
Yeah, that's a really generous description of a slump when he actually finishes outside the top 10 for a week.
Let's listen in earlier, Scottie Scheffler with the media in Colorado.
You play for some pretty big trophies between the majors and the Players' Championship and the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup and now the FedEx Cup. How would you characterize or sort of categorize the FedEx Cup in all of that?
Yeah, I felt like a question I got asked a lot at the Olympics is where does this rank in terms of wins and stuff like that. And I have a difficulty, you know, kind of choosing. I want to win each tournament that I, you know, teed up in. Being able to win out here is really special. Anytime you can accomplish that, it's very difficult to win out here on tour. And, you know, I think the FedEx Cup is also really challenging to win just because you got to play really solid golf all year and then you got to play amazing golf, you know, these last 3 weeks. You can't limp your way in to win in the FedEx Cup. And so, you know, I think really it's just, I think a lot of good competition throughout the year, and it's hard to rate which ones would be, you know, better than others. And so I just love coming out here and competing, and, you know, it's one of the great joys of my life, and it's something that is a lot of fun for me. And, you know, I'm looking forward to doing that another couple of weeks and then, you know, defending our President's Cup trophy in about a month. If I was to truly say I want to play my best golf at Eastlake, this may have been a week where I would have taken off. just because there's so much emphasis on East Lake, and I've never, I think I kind of figured out this year, I don't love playing the week before a major championship, and so with East Lake having so much important in the, you know, the season-long race, if I was to truly look at, like, my goal at the beginning of the year is to win East Lake, this would be a week where I would consider maybe taking off, especially with the points lead that I have. But at the end of the day, you know, I talk about, you know, not one trophy being much more important than another. Yeah, I would love to win the FedEx Cup, but I would also love to win this tournament. You know, I've never won a playoff event before, and so that would be something that would be really cool to do. I've had, you know, good chances to win them and haven't been able to do it. Also, should have a good chance to win next week, starting with the lead. But overall, I love competing, and I set my schedule at the beginning of the year to play certain events that I love to play in. And, you know, this year was another one of those years, and so going into this week, I'm excited to play. I love competing. You know, we got the guys that have played the best golf on the PGA Tour this year here this week, and it should be some good competition.
You know what else Scotty loves to do? That's win. We're looking at most wins in a season. This for the past 25 years. Tiger Woods, of course, in 2009 wins three majors, the gold standard. Vijay Singh in 04. People sleep on how remarkable that year was with nine wins in a major. A couple eight-win seasons from Tiger. You got to get down through a lot of Tiger seasons to see Scottie Scheffler at six. There are just five seasons where players have had more wins than where Scheffler's currently at. And he's not done yet. We still got two playoff events to go.
And speaking of career years, back in 2015, Jason Day won his first major championship. That was at the PGA Championship up at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. Set a major championship scoring record that week, 20 under par, good enough for a three-stroke victory. But his good play continued in the FedEx Cup playoffs later that year. He won the BMW Championship at Conway Farms, and that win earned him the number one spot in the official World Golf ranking. And here is what Jason Day did in that epic season of 2015. 20 starts, 5 victories, including the two we just mentioned, 11 top 10 finishes, and 2 missed cuts.
How bad was his luck that it was also Jordan Spieth had 5 wins, 2 majors that season? Both those guys had incredible years, and it happened to be the same season.
And Jason Day joins us now from the BMW Championship at Castle Pines in Denver, Colorado. Jason, you're 25th in the FedEx Cup list. The top 30 are making it to East Lake next week. So you're kind of on the fringes of the bubble. Have you looked at all at whatever kind of permutations you need in terms of a finish to guarantee yourself a week of work next week?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's the goal, is to try and get to the Tour Champs, give yourself a shot at the FedEx Cup. Currently, right now, sitting at 25th, as you know, I have looked at the numbers, but I haven't quite kind of divulged into, like, what positions do I need to finish here this week. So I'm just, I'd prefer just to kind of go out there and just play, you know, one hole at a time, and then, you know, kind of add them up at the end of the week. And if it's good enough, then great. If not, then obviously, you know, I've got a week off next week. But you know, I'm looking forward to the week. I think it's brings back memories from when I was young, obviously, playing here back in 2006. But, you know, I'm excited for the week to get started, yes.
What are those memories from 06, from back in the day?
I remember rain delays. And apparently it rains here, storms here, like every, you know, around 3, 4 o'clock every afternoon here. So that's kind of what we got out there. And then yeah, I mean, I think we're going to try and battle. We're going to battle a little bit of, you know, storms potentially tomorrow. But I think the rest of the week looks good. I did have a look at the wind conditions. The wind conditions are going to be kind of, there is a potential of that storm rolling in. And when that happens, the wind kind of switches around here. So I was having a look at it, and it was, you know, 360 degrees, all different directions tomorrow. If that happens, then it's going to be a hard day for the caddies out there, because there's going to be a lot of angry golfers, I would suspect. But, you know, it's, you know, just a lot of good memories, you know, from 2006. I remember sitting there talking to Ryan Moore in the clubhouse, and watching him win the US Amateur, and, you know, back in the day. And then I got to sit down with him and have a chat with him. And obviously, you know, just all the other good players. This was a big time event back in the day, you know, seeing Norman roll up in his Range Rover. That was another memory, but, you know, it's good to be back here in Denver.
Are weeks like this a difficult adjustment for you, Jason? Because you show up every other week on tour with one goal, which is to win. But this week, the goal, sure, it's to win, but you also have to kind of keep in the back of your mind that you're trying to live to fight another day in the playoffs. Does that require splitting your attention a little bit in a way that you don't normally?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does if you start attaching yourself to that process. My whole deal is to try and work out how far the ball's actually going this week. Obviously, we are playing at altitude, and trying to figure out all the nuances of certain shots taking 10 yards, 20 yards, 30 yards off these shots. It can be very difficult, and they're going all sorts of different directions. You know, miss hits don't go quite as far. When you do lift the ball up a little bit higher, sometimes they go a little bit further than what you're expecting. So my main focus is trying to kind of get a handle on that. Right now, I just, you know, obviously, like, it's in the back of my mind, yes, but, you know, I can't do anything other than, you know, just trying to go out there and play the best I can. If that happens, then great, I'm into next week. If it doesn't, then, you know, like I said before, a week off. But it is in the back of my mind, but I'm not trying to attach myself to that that whole process of it.
Jason, you guys are getting the full mountain experience this week, 6,400 feet above sea level. That's the highest elevation of any PGA Tour stop. It's more than 8,100 yards on the scorecard, longest course in PGA Tour history. I've been seeing some just like preposterous carry numbers for guys as they're trying to get their games dialed in. Yeah. What have you seen with your own game?
Yeah. Well, I mean, considering my 7-iron usually goes about 187 yards, and this week it's going 212 yards, it's kind of hard to get a grasp on, like, looking at a pin and knowing that it is 210, 215 yards away and you're sitting there pulling a 7-iron. So it's the ability to be able to come out and calibrate all your numbers early on. We had a really good day yesterday where the wind was, you know, significantly down. There wasn't a lot of wind at all. You're able to come out and kind of calibrate to those numbers. And then from there, it's just really trying to get used to the golf course, the elevation changes, you know, going off one right now is one's behind me. You're teeing off down the hill. There's a significant elevation change. Once you hit the drive off the first tee, the wind is in out of the left. So the ball's going to be stuck in the air for a very, very long time. So once you start going down that hill and the winds are starting to, you know, move the ball around, and, you know, typically in the past, I'd be like, get the ball on the ground as fast as possible so the wind wouldn't really have an effect. But, you know, this week it's going to be very difficult to do that just because of the sheer elevation change from top to bottom, but also the wind conditions that we're going to have.
You've played in Australian summers, Jason, so you know what hot is, and that's not really an issue this week. But last week it was oppressive in Memphis. There's a good chance it could be next week in Atlanta as well. Is it about time the PGA Tour let you guys wear shorts on competition days as you do on practice days?
I don't know if you want to see my legs, to be honest, Damon. but you know what? I think I think it's a good change that we have Monday through Wednesday. We have shorts, and then once you play, you start Thursday. It's a professional league. You know, we obviously, like, you look at different leagues. You know, football, they have their jerseys. You know, basketball, they have their jerseys. They have certain uniforms that they wear, and I think like long pants from Thursday to Sunday is, you know, part of the uniform that we wear, and it looks professional. I think it makes things look a lot more classier. I'm a little bit more old school in that sense while I'm wearing my, you know, fishnet shorts here, but it's a little bit different to say that. But, like, yeah, I think there are some weeks where I wish we could wear shorts, but I don't know if that's going to come anytime soon.
I used to be like stridently pro shorts, and now I've evolved my thinking where I'm with you. I think during competition, the classic pants looks just gives it a more elevated feel. I get shorts in the practice rounds. Jason, always good catching up with you. Play well this week.
Thanks. Cheers, guys.
Victor Hovland is defending the BMW Championship in Denver, even though he won it last year in Chicago. He's also defending the FedEx Cup itself. The Pride of Norway is here right after the break.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
We're back on golf today. Taking a look back at last year's FedEx Cup playoffs, Victor Hovland won the BMW Championship. That was at Olympia Fields. Final round course record 61, which included 7 birdies on the back nine. Well, Victor followed that performance with another win the following week in the Tour Championship at Eastlake, winning by 5, taking home the FedEx Cup and a bonus check for $18 million. This year, something of a struggle though for Victor. 14 starts, no wins. He was a runner-up last week, his only other top 10 finish on the season coming as a third-place finish at Valhalla in the PGA Championship. And the reigning FedEx Cup champion Victor Hovland joins us now. Victor, you've had success in defending titles. You've won back-to-back at Mayakoba, back-to-back at the Hero World Challenge. This isn't really a typical defense of a title, not even this week at the BMW. Since you won in Chicago, you're defending in Denver. Does it feel in any way like a title defense to you this week?
Yeah, it still does, I would say. But, yeah, as you said, we're at a completely different golf course. I mean, you're so far up, the ball's going forever, so there's a lot of things to adjust to. But it still feels good getting on property and being called the defending champ. So that's still really cool.
Victor, it was fun watching last week on site the run you made after opening with a 70 to battle all the way back to T2. And we kept saying, and I was on set with Johnson Wagner, how similar the first 2 days were to last year. When you opened with a 72, second round 64, you ripped off 11 straight to win the FedEx Cup Championship. The difference from, say, Thursday morning to leaving Sunday night with your golf game, how material was that last week?
Yeah, that was super exciting. I don't think like that week was that similar to last year. I mean, it kind of looks like it result-wise, but where I'm at with my swing, it was more like last year I wasn't that far off. So after I had a really good range session on Thursday after that round, I kind of got enough confidence to feel like I could play some really good golf. And I was able to turn it around really well last year. And I obviously did the same this year as well. But I still don't feel quite as confident as I did at this point last year. But I think even with that being said, I can still put good rounds together and I can still be up there and compete. And that's what I'm most excited about, that I have something that's functional enough to come out here and compete with.
Victor, in your press conference last Tuesday in Memphis, you said golf is not fun when you don't know where the golf ball is going, which is something the rest of us can relate to. But 5 days later, you were right there at the top of the leaderboard. Was there some kind of breakthrough moment during the week when you were working on your swing, or is it just the incremental progress that you've been working on all season?
Well, I guess I was kind of making just a general statement of how I felt like I've played throughout the year. Just generally, week in, week out, I just haven't really known where the ball's going, and it's been very frustrating. But after Paris, I went straight to Nashville, where Joe, my coach, is at right now, and we had a week together where we just worked on a lot of good stuff. Also, Sasha McKenzie came in for a day and we just discussed through some things. We had gotten my swing measured on 3D. So just accumulating a lot of data, a lot of measurements, so we knew exactly what we needed to do. And that week, I feel like we kind of put the train back on track. I was able to see some old ball flights, starting to get some old feels. And last week was just kind of a continuation of that good week in Nashville. And now it's just about kind of continuing down that road and seeing progress every single week. And I feel like some good things are going to happen.
Victor, part of what makes you fun to interview, you're a naturally curious guy. And we also see that with your golf game, where you're inquisitive and kind of want to have an approach that gives you answers and you're willing to evolve. And we see different players kind of take different paths. Say Jack Nicklaus had the same type of swing throughout his career. Tiger Woods had 4 or 5. This might be act number 6 with his swing. How do you envision your future going forward when you reach a point of equilibrium? Like, will you be a tinkerer down the road, or will you be a guy who finally reaches a certain path where you feel, okay, that's the road I'm going to take once I have a sense that I'm there?
Yeah, good question. I think at this point in my career, there's not that much I can do. You know, I think there's always going to be tweaking. I think even the guy that says or tries to keep things very simple and just kind of has his swing for 20 years and that's his career, I feel like even those guys will, even if they don't admit it, they always have something they tinker on, or they always have something that, okay, when I get off, I need to do this drill to get back, or, you know, things like that. Because the golf swing is, or the game of golf, it's crazy. It's like a living organism. It will just change over time with that, whether you want it to or not. And I think you have to keep up with that if you want to play your best golf. Now, just me personally, I haven't been scared of kind of looking through what potentially is on the other side and trying things out if I feel like I have a very good hypothesis of it working out. And generally, that's been the case. So I'm not scared to try to do something different if I believe it's going to help me in the future. But at this point, I feel like I've gone down most roads that there aren't – there's not that much juice left to squeeze, in my opinion. I kind of have to control the things that I do really well and just stick to that. And I know that that's good enough to play some pretty high level golf.
Victor, you came on our set at Pinehurst during the US Open, and you talked about the natural inquisitiveness that you've approached your game with over the years, and how, yeah, you do open a lot of doors looking for information, but you made the point that you close a lot of doors behind you. How important has that discipline been in terms of stopping you going too far down a rabbit hole in the ability to actually use and then discard whatever information is not actually of use to you?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to play contrarian a little bit with yourself. You get curious, or you find something you think it is the answer, but you always have to play kind of the devil's advocate and think, okay, well, why would it work, or what could potentially go wrong? And you have to evaluate those decisions pretty intently, because it is your career you're potentially messing with. But I think the more, just one of my principles is, the more information you have, the better chance you have at making a good decision. And that's kind of how I've always gone about things. And yeah, I feel like I've done some really good decision, or I made some good decisions in my life, so I intend to continue with that strategy. Obviously gotta be wary of what works and what doesn't, and if the risk is too high, then it's not worth doing. But I'm always going to be curious, and I'm always going to look for ways to improve. But now that I've made a couple of mistakes, I know what doors to not pursue, and I know where to go and where to not go, hopefully.
Well, whatever you did the final 54 holes last week was spectacular. After opening with that 70, you were 15 under combined from Friday, Saturday into Sunday. That made you jump a huge jump up in the FedEx Cup standings, I believe, to 16th now. As we're spinning it forward to Mountain Golf this week at Castle Pines, what are your expectations for a layout that you don't traditionally see on the PGA Tour, as this is the highest elevation of any course this season?
Yeah, I'm not very used to playing in this kind of altitude, so it's definitely a lot of number crunching this week with my caddy, just trying to figure out how far the ball's going, how far the hole's playing. I still expect to play pretty well this week. I feel like the game is in decent enough shape to where I can kind of keep things going from last week and hopefully put myself in a good spot for next week. But I just finished a pro-am, and going up to the 10th hole, Austin Eckroat was there on the tee, and we were kind of talking about it. We don't know what the scores are going to be this week, because it's, you know, the course is long, but the ball's going forever. There's some big greens, there's some par fives. You know, you can make some birdies, but rough is pretty thick, so it's like, yeah, just have no idea what the scores are going to be like. So I guess that'll be interesting to see.
Victor, you just trying to give us an undersell, over-deliver, saying, yeah, the game's okay, I just finished runner-up last week?
Yeah, I mean, it's how I honestly feel, but I know I can still play some really good golf with that, but I'm not delusional in kind of what I've got going on, but I'm still not going to let that deter me from playing my best golf this week. But I don't like to get false confidence, if you will. That doesn't mean that I'm not happy about results last week, but I kind of look deeper than the result, just the results. It's like how I was able to do it matters almost more to me.
Victor, Rory McIlroy had an interesting description of you in an interview earlier this summer. He was talking about how popular you are with fans. You've got this smiling, personable demeanor, but you're also extremely competitive. And he said you were Ricky Fowler with a killer instinct. What do you feel like when you hear a comment like that from a guy like Rory?
Thank you, I guess. yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, I like to have a good time out there. I like to engage with people and just have a good time. But when it comes down to playing golf, like I'm here to play my best, and I don't find myself, I feel like the more small talk or the more I kind of talk about other things while I'm competing on the golf course, that tends to take away a little bit from my focus. I feel like I kind of need to go into my own shell a little bit when I play, to play my best golf. That's just kind of how I've always been. And outside the golf course or kind of in practice rounds and stuff, we can be a little bit more loose and play with the fans a little bit. But during competition, I definitely like to just focus and try to play my best golf.
Well, we saw some of your best golf on display a year ago as part of that 3-win season of the FedEx Cup champion. And Victor, if you want to know what false confidence is, it's two men wearing makeup doing a 2-hour golf talk show here on Golf Channel. That is false confidence. So good to
there you go.
Good to chat with you. And
someone's got to do it.
Exactly. And why not us? Have fun this week inside the ropes at Castle Pines.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
When Golf Today returns, and what a guest list we have this week. We're checking in with a past FedEx Cup champion and Brant Snedeker. What are his memories from 12 years ago at Eastlake? We're going to catch him next. Back in 2012, Brant Snedeker earned the biggest win of his career in the Tour Championship. Snedeker, final round 68 at Eastlake to win by 3 and claim the FedEx Cup. That's the biggest prize in golf at the time. It was a $10 million bonus check. That number has jumped up to 25 mil. Just a few weeks ago, U.S. Ryder Cup captain Keegan Bradley named Brant Snedeker as his second assistant captain at Bethpage Black for next year's Ryder Cup. Sneds was, of course, on that 2016 victorious U.S. Ryder Cup team. Seeing the photos there from Hazeltine, he joins Webb Simpson as part of Keegan's staff going forward. And let's welcome in the man, Brant Snedeker. So, Brant, with that in your rearview mirror, and we're taking a look at the FedEx Cup playoffs, let's start kind of with where they're at now. How have the FedEx Cup playoffs evolved from when you won it back in 2012?
Yeah, it's changed a lot, obviously. You know, there's been a lot of change in golf, it seems, recently. And back when I won it, you know, it was the top five going into Eastlake had a chance to win if they won the golf tournament. And so I was the fifth-ranked player going in that week and had a great week at Eastlake, was able to pull out the victory. So it's changed a lot now with the way they redone the format. Obviously, only 70 guys make the FedEx Cup playoffs now, 50 this week, I think, and then 30 on. So it's changed a ton, but still does a great job of identifying who's playing good over a kind of a three or four-week stretch.
Brant, you can tell that you've reached a certain maturity as a golfer when they start making you an assistant captain in a Ryder Cup and when they start giving you awards. You just got a pretty significant award, the Payne Stewart Award, which really is a testament to kind of sportsmanship and character. What did it mean to you to get that award?
Yeah, it was a very humbling experience. You know, I never actually thought I would win that award. I tried to live my life out here and the way I handled myself, the way I carried myself, with the idea of wanting to win that award and realizing how important it was. I got a really fortunate chance my rookie year to see Hal Sutton accept his award, and it really kind of moved me to see him give his speech that night, to see what it meant to him, to understand the importance of this award, and then kind of set my goal going forward is trying to live my life out here on the PGA Tour with that in mind. And I feel very honored and blessed to be a recipient and know it's something I think is really special, and I can't wait to be in Eastlake on Tuesday night and kind of celebrate with some of the former champions and kind of celebrate with my family as well. So it's really special, and I can't thank the tour and Southern Company and the Stewart family enough for thinking me worthy of this honor.
Brant, we got to get a little more of the backstory of how you first got into the game of golf with your grandma, Valerie Hayes, and her connection to Payne Stewart's parents in Springfield, Missouri, and just fittingly enough, how that touch point has led to where you are today.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know, how everything kind of comes full circle. You know, she got me my first set of golf clubs. I would go up there in the summertime when I was 6 years old, spend a couple weeks with her, and she was a huge Payne Stewart fan. She knew Payne's dad, and they had that connection. So she would just always, whenever golf was on, she was always watching Payne Stewart. And that's kind of how I grew up, getting exposed to the game of golf and turning into loving, turns out to, you know, to be my lifelong passion. And so Payne was always the guy I looked up to, was one of the guys I kind of always wanted to kind of model myself after, and wish I had his pizzazz. I wish I had his golf game. Didn't have that, but I had a lot of fun trying to be like that. And so it's been, you know, to have this come full circle, to know that, you know, Springfield, where is Payne's hometown, where all my family's from, to have this connection with him, and you know, now to have this award. Unfortunately, I never got to meet him. I never got to play golf with him out here. You know, so one of the things about the PGA Tour, it's so cool, is you get to meet a lot of the people you looked up to in the game of golf. And probably the biggest regrets, I never got to meet him. But this kind of feels like a full circle moment for me to have this connection to him. And I hope he knows what he meant to me, and realize hopefully that I can live up to his great name and his great legacy.
Part of the reason for this honor, Brandt, is you and your wife, Mandy, have been involved in a lot of charitable endeavors over the years. Do you feel as though over the last few years that's a side of tour life that's kind of been pushed to the margins? We see so much focus on this perception that the players are out for themselves, and there's less focus on the guys who are actually doing the kind of things that you've been doing for years. Is that a fair assessment?
I don't know if it's a fair assessment. I think a lot of guys do it not for the everyday person to know about. A lot of guys can do a lot for charity that nobody ever knows about. I think, you know, the game of golf has obviously changed recently because of the competition for players and money becoming up front and center for that. I've always been a huge believer in the foundation of the PGA Tour and why it's so successful is because it gets the best golfers in the world playing with great sponsors who are impacting communities they're in. You know, that's what I learned early on in tours, seeing the guys I look up to and how they impacted their local communities, knowing every week we played on the PGA Tour, we were impacting the community we live in. And you can look at the tour stops that have been around forever and see how they've impacted those cities. I think that's something that's really special. And it's something that I'm hoping we don't lose. I'm hoping we never lose sight of that, because without that, the tour would not be what it is. It would not have the kind of people that play on it. It would not have the sponsors that we have, and it wouldn't impact the communities the way we do. And I think it's super important and something that sometimes gets lost when business gets involved. And I hope we never lose that.
With where business conversations have gone over the last 6 months, 12 months, it's obviously been a focal point. The updates have kind of dissipated a bit the past few months as they're trying to hammer out a deal. Just your perception of where things currently stand, which direction do you think the momentum is going?
To be honest, I don't have any idea. My personal belief is that I think there will be a resolution before the end of the year. It's one way or the other. I ideally would like to get everybody back together playing. I think it's best for the tour. It's best for the game. I think this fracturing is not a good idea. I don't think it's going to help the game of golf grow in any way, shape, or form. It's just going to split whatever fans we do have. And so I'd like to get back to kind of the way I see the game playing is, playing all over the world, the best players playing against each other more often, not losing sight of what we are as its organization, who we are, our foundation is, the kind of people that we invest in, the kind of people we do business with. And so I would like to see that kind of come back to full in front in our business decisions going forward. And I think that will happen at some point. I think cooler heads will prevail and that we will all get back to playing golf. So, maybe in a little different fashion than we are right now, but I think at the end of the day, it will end up coming back together and playing again.
There does seem to be this kind of season of change that's coming, Brandt. There was a Players Advisory Council meeting yesterday when they were discussing the possibility of some changes in terms of the number of cards available, perhaps and maybe even a narrowing of pathways onto the PGA Tour, field sizes being adjusted. Are you supportive of a kind of a streamlining of the product in that respect, or do you have any concerns that it might just put too much of a squeeze on guys?
I'm actually in favor of streamlining it a little bit. I think there's been, as we've evolved as a game, as you've seen, if you don't evolve with the times, if you take Major League Baseball, for example, they made a huge rule change 2 years ago and totally changed their TV partnership, their TV revenue. For the good. They finally came up with the times. I think golf is in a similar point right now where we need to kind of reevaluate how we look at things, make sure that our product is growing and not just stagnant from just because it's that's the way we've always done it. So I do think that, you know, streamlining it to a degree with maybe 100 cards given out every year, 120 man fields, I'm not a fan of this these elevated events. I don't think it's accomplishing what they set out to accomplish with it. I think if we have just a full schedule like we used to, but 120-man fields, 100 cards going out every week, figuring out how to work, make that work with all the numbers, I think that would be a great kind of way to start getting back to doing PGA Tour business. I think making cuts important. I think we've lost that in some of these events, and I think that's something that we should not lose. It's part of our history. I think it's one of the best, I think, unbreakable stats that we'll ever have is Tiger Woods' cut record that will never be touched, and I don't want to lose stuff like that in our game.
Yeah, there's no chance. I mean, that record's just off the charts. You can wave a magic wand and you get to grant one wish as commissioner. What would be an outside-the-box idea that maybe you've kicked around where you're like, I would really like to see this in the future?
You know, I get that question a lot. I am not smart enough to think of anything that I could change. You know,
come on, didn't you get your MBA?
I did, but it was in communications, and you can tell how that worked out for me. So there's not really any one thing. I mean, I think the biggest thing that I see right now is I want to see full fields again. I want to see 120-man fields with cuts. I just think that's a better product overall. I want to see guys playing the weekend who are playing great golf. I want to see iron sharpen iron. I want to see guys moving in there, pushing old guys like me off a tour and making a tour a better product.
Finally, Brant, in among all the stuff you have going on right now, you're also one of Keegan Bradley's assistant captains for the Ryder Cup with Webb Simpson. Safe to say that we're seeing a changing of the guard, a generational changing of the guard here in terms of stewardship of the Ryder Cup U.S. team?
I think it's just a natural evolution of it, really. You know, I know Keegan was kind of a surprise pick for some people after playing on a team with him. I know there's nobody more passionate about the Ryder Cup than him. And I think that's something that's desperately needed. And I think having him in there to kind of relook at things, to kind of give his passion to it, is going to be a huge positive in the long term. And I think it's going to kind of rejuvenate some of the guys, get them excited about what's possible coming forward. You know, it's going to be an unbelievable scene in Bethpage. I cannot wait to help Keegan kind of deliver his message and deliver his, what a Ryder Cup in New York should look like. You know, it's going to be an epic week, and I'm just so excited to try to help Keegan put the best team forward and have a great competition.
Well, as a European, I hope you're not too successful in that job out there, Brant, but it's always great to catch up with you, and we look forward to catching the Payne Stewart Awards ceremony here on Golf Channel next Tuesday.
Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and I won't talk to you until after the Ryder Cup next year.
just one of us. Yes. As Golf Today rolls on, we're catching up with the U.S. Open champion who's playing a home game this week in Colorado. How is Wyndham Clark preparing for this week's BMW Championship? That's still to come after this short break. The more I watch this, the more I question how this didn't go in. Wyndham Clark to force a playoff at the Players. Just a brutal lip out. That would have been a showdown with Scottie Scheffler in bonus holes. Instead, Scheffler gets the win. And for Clark, it was another runner-up finish back-to-back weeks from the Arnold Palmer to the Players. He did get that win at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Remember, he shot a 60 in what was the third and final round because that was shortened to 54 holes. So he's currently ranked top 20 in both strokes gained off the tee and putting. And in Paris, he had that slow start and then battled back to finish top 15, went 65-65 in rounds 3 and 4. So we're calling this a home game this week. Clark, you go about 20-25-minute drive to find where he went to high school at Valor Christian in Highlands Ranch, one of his high school classmates. Take a look at this. 49ers starting running back Christian McCaffrey, the NFL Offensive Player of the Year. A year ago, that was McCaffrey saying congrats to Wyndham Clark on his win at the U.S. Open and his first PGA Tour victory at the Wells Fargo last year. Here's Clark with Kira K. Dixon, our reporter at this week's BMW Championship.
You don't get to play a lot of professional golf in your home state. The last time that the tour was in Colorado was 10 years ago, and 2006 was the last time they were at Castle Pines. So what's the fan club family management situation going to be like for you this week?
Well, a lot. We've definitely given out a lot of tickets. All my family's gotten these hats, these pink hats that say Dub Club and then Play Big on the back, which is kind of cool. So, yeah, I have a lot of family and friends. And then you know, I have people from my high school and grade school and whatnot that are, you know, I haven't seen forever, and they're all coming out. So I imagine I'll have a pretty good fan base.
You're one of the only people in the field that has any experience at Castle Pines. So how would you describe this golf course?
It's, well, one, it's beautiful, and it's one of the premier, if not the premier, clubs in Colorado. It's tough because of the elevation. So we don't normally play at elevation. We're at 6,000 feet here, and there's a lot of elevation change as well. So the hardest thing here is honestly controlling your golf ball. And then, you know, the next thing is the greens are typically very firm, and so you've got to be playing from the fairway. So those are probably my two biggest tips for anyone.
But you're not giving away all the time.
No, that's just between us.
Okay. Us and the whole Golf Channel audience watching.
Yeah.
So for you growing up nearby, how much experience do you actually have at Castle Pines?
I was going through that. I've probably, I'd say between like 30 and 40 times I've played here.
Wow.
You know, I didn't grow up playing at this golf course, but I had two really good friends that played here, and they hosted me quite a bit. And then as I've gotten older and I come back to Colorado, I love coming to play this place. So, yeah, about 30 times.
Now, I know you mentioned those tips, but the elevation over 6,000 feet, this is the longest golf course to ever be played in PGA Tour history, over 8,000 yards. So for you to switch your mindset from, you know, regular PGA Tour week in, week out to something like this, what is the main thing to keep in mind?
You know, it'll probably, like, we're so good at adjusting, I feel like, pros are. So, you know, even though it's 8,100 or whatever it is, you know, with the 10% of elevation, it comes out to be roughly what we play at about 7,300 at sea level. So, you know, once you make the adjustments of how far your clubs go, it's normal golf. It's just now, instead of hitting your 7-iron what you're used to, it's another 20 yards farther. So once you make those adjustments, I mean, it's normal golf. You know, one of the biggest and toughest things is trajectory with how high you hit it. So growing up here, you know, I knew how far I hit my 7-iron. But if I wanted a little extra in Colorado, if you hit it higher, it goes farther. And you maybe can't do that at sea level. So that's kind of maybe a little local knowledge and being used to the altitude that if you're in between clubs, you kind of always go with the shorter club and hit it harder.
Okay. So a place that you did not have local knowledge, I want to switch gears to Le Golf National and your Olympic experience.
Yep.
You've talked about it a little bit. You told our own Smiley Kaufman about the cardboard bed experience and all of that. But when you just kind of put into perspective now that you've had 2 weeks to really process the Olympics, what are going to be the main things that really stand out to you?
One, I just think the honor of representing your country is amazing. And there's nothing like it in sports. And, you know, to do it at the highest level at the Olympics was honestly an amazing experience and is second to none. The opening ceremonies is probably the number one thing for me, just being on the boat with the best U.S. athletes and then all the athletes going through that experience Colin and I were on the boat together and we're just looking around and going, is this even real? It didn't feel real. So that was so cool. And then, you know, getting to witness all the other sports, was neat. And then obviously, you know, the golf was amazing. There was 30,000 every day. They loved the golf. They were great fans, and it felt like a major. The Olympics is becoming one of the biggest, if not the biggest, event in golf.
Yeah, I was out there on that final day. It was wild.
It was so cool.
How passionate the fans were.
Yeah.
And did you get to be a passionate fan for other sports?
Yes, I went to. I was really fortunate. I got a bunch of tickets to a bunch of different events. I went to swimming, gymnastics, track, tennis, and beach volleyball. So I saw a lot.
Did you go to beach volleyball at night?
At night. Under the Eiffel Tower, which was amazing.
You can't beat that. The first round of the Olympics, you shoot 75. And then you kind of flip a switch and you end up having a great rest of that golf tournament. It seems like you've been playing some great golf since then. So where are you at with the golf game and what kind of switched after that first day of the Olympics?
I've actually been playing a lot of really good kind of Friday, Saturday, Sundays. I've been struggling on the Thursday. And that was even before the Olympics. And I was really bummed. Honestly, I wanted to have a great Olympics and wanted to try to medal for my country. And I was really pissed that day. I went home and was mad. But the great thing about the Olympics is you're playing for something bigger. And it's not just about your individual accolades. You're playing for your country. And I wanted to represent my country well. And so I said, you know what? This is an opportunity to go show them who I am. And I'm an American athlete and also build momentum for the playoffs. Mm. And so that was huge for me. I mean, playing three rounds where I played honestly an amazing golf. And, you know, I even had a couple of water balls in those three rounds. You know, that's four shots. I maybe have a chance outside look at a bronze even with shooting 75. But I built a lot of momentum with that, and I played really nice last week in Memphis. So the game's trending, and it's a good time to trend. And hopefully, you know, I play great this week at home and leading to the Tour Championship.
And here is where you can watch the BMW Championship beginning Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel and Peacock. Same again Friday, Saturday and Sunday. Coverage begins on Golf Channel and Peacock and then moves to NBC. Golf Today will be right back.
As Golf Today rolls along, and hour number two, stars are out in Colorado for the second leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Two-time major champ Xander Schauffele catches up with Keirke Dixon ahead of tomorrow's first round. And Rory McIlroy looking to rebound from a brutal week in Memphis. What's the latest with Rory as he tries to chase down his fourth career FedEx Cup championship?
Golf Today.
1 hour down, we got one to go. Welcome inside our Golf Channel Worldwide headquarters. George Savarikas hanging with Eamon Lynch. You're watching Golf Today. We still got a 60-minute sprint to the finish with Rory McIlroy, who's the most decorated FedEx Cup champion of all time. We wouldn't have known that last week with what we saw at TPC Southwind, but this could be a new week for Rory at Castle Pines.
Every week brings new promise out there on the PGA Tour. They're in Colorado, as George noted, for the first time in 10 years for the BMW Championship. Castle Pines Golf Club, the host site, first-round coverage will begin tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. We're going to head out now to Castle Pines in Colorado and catch up with Keira K. Dixon. And Keira, you had a chance to catch up with Scotty Scheffler and Xander Schauffele, number one and number two in the FedEx Cup rankings. What did you find out?
Yeah, Eamon, some great conversations. Well, of course, Scotty Scheffler is the number one player in those FedEx Cup standings. And the only person that has the opportunity to possibly overtake him going into the Tour Championship is number two, Xander Schauffele. He's also the only other player that's really in the conversation for Player of the Year honors. But when Xander spoke with me earlier this week, he talked about the runner-up finish that he had in Memphis and just the momentum that he's able to take from that coming into the BMW Championship.
Yeah, it definitely helps. I mean, it's always good to, I guess, see the ball go in or see yourself hitting the right shots. And when you're shooting 63 around that property at Southwind, you know you're doing some things right. So, but again, we're shifting gears here to a completely different property that demands different shots. So, gonna try and, you know, stick to what I do, and we'll plot around and kind of feel it out after Thursday, and then move from there.
Thinking about the season holistically, I remember having a conversation with your caddy, Austin Kaiser, at the U.S. Open. We're talking about, obviously, the win at the PGA Championship, and he said, all right, that's it, time to rack them up. How has your confidence in yourself and your game changed this year with what you've been able to do?
Sounds like something Austin would say. It's very validating. You know, the first one was the fashion of it, just kind of being in the hunt. I was really nervous. It was very touch and go with the lead, and then knowing I have to make that putt. It was very validating. It was a very good feeling. The Open was very different. You know, it was something I felt like I could kind of take command of, take control, and was able to do that on the back nine. So the confidence bucket's definitely filled up, and, you know, I know it's going to help moving forward with more majors.
And moving forward just for the next few weeks, there's one golfer out there, Scotty Scheffler, that's been very hard to beat this year, and you've done the best job of that, but better than anybody else this season. How important is the momentum from this week in terms of thinking about, like, okay, I want to go and catch him compared to just focusing on your own golf game?
Yeah, I mean, I played the first two rounds with Scotty over there. I'm going to play my first two with Scotty here. Scotty, I mean, he kind of had like a sleepy T4 finish last week. You know, no one's really, I don't read a lot of news, but, you know, he was right. I beat him by one shot. So that's kind of the way you clip the guy. You kind of clip him here and there by one or two shots on the week. And it sort of is what it is. So, I mean, I feel like there's going to be more names. I think once you get to East Lake with that format, two-shot lead on that property that has been, you know, has been redone now, I think it's going to be a little bit different. I don't think we can play off as much memory as we have or I've had in the past. So really going to have to just focus on myself. And, you know, there's going to be more guys to beat than just him probably.
I know you said you wanted to focus on yourself, but you did mention that at the Olympics you got the chance to get to know him a little bit better. Same thing with Colin and with Wyndham, but what did you learn more about Scotty at the Olympics that you didn't know before?
He's, we have a similar sense of humor, I guess. He's not afraid to pick on anyone, you know. Everyone thinks he is a really nice guy, but at the same time, he's more than that. You know, he can mess around. He's good in a team room. He can make people laugh. And he is a pleasure to be around. So, besides his golf game, he's a really cool dude.
So I also asked Scotty what he learned about Xander from that experience at the Olympics. And Scotty said, you know, when you're on a team like the Ryder Cup, there's 12 guys, you're kind of in your little pods, you're not necessarily spending as much time together. But for the Olympics, it's just the four of them. They're in car rides together, they're on planes together. So naturally, of course, you're going to get to know one another a lot more. They actually took a plane back to the States together. And Scotty told me that on that flight, Xander held his young son, Bennett, more than Scotty did. And they just spent a lot of time talking about the sacrifices that Xander has made to get better in his game. Scotty told me he's very impressed with the fact that Xander doesn't just rely on his natural talent. He's put a lot of work in to get to where he is today. Now, speaking of a lot of work, of course, Scotty's done a lot of his own work to get to that very familiar position of number one in the world and number one in the FedEx Cup standings. It's been a tight turnaround since the Olympics, and he talked to me about the mental shift that it takes to then shift to the playoffs.
Yeah, it was definitely a tight turnaround. I did my best to get some rest that off week, kind of get adjusted to this time zone, and then I showed up to Memphis feeling pretty rested and was able to handle the heat fairly well. I obviously wish I was a couple shots better, but Hideki had a great week last week, and he was going to be a tough man to catch.
So mentioned that this is a familiar position for you, but a completely different season. How would you describe how different you feel in this version of being number one in the FedEx Cup standings?
Yeah, I think it's the most consistent year I've had as a pro. I've had a lot of great starts, and I've been able to get some wins out of those starts as well. And so I'm going into the FedEx Cup playoffs feeling good. It's you know, it's anybody's game now, but you know, I did my job and qualified for East Lake, and you know, hopefully I'll be going in there with a lead and have a good week.
First time getting to play this golf course, what are your takeaways and impressions?
Yeah, the ball goes far here. You know, I'm sure that's a big topic of discussion, but that's really the biggest adjustment. You know, the rough is pretty thick this week as well, and I think the greens are really going to firm out as long as the evening rain kind of holds off. And so I think it's going to be a really good test. It should be a fun week, and you're going to have some really good control of your ball.
How much work is this going to be for Teddy figuring everything out there?
Yeah, I'm glad he's doing all the math, not me. You know, but I think we got a good gauge for how we're going to play it, and it's going to be really challenging, especially with the wind. The wind has a tendency to swirl here as well, and so you know, it's going to be a week where you're going to have to be patient with myself and with the golf course as well.
As Scotty mentioned, the altitude is certainly a big topic of conversation out here at Castle Pines. And Scotty's got a little bit of experience playing at altitude. When he was on the Corn Ferry Tour back in 2019, he played here in Colorado. He played in Bogota. He said he remembers having very weird dreams during those tournaments and kind of some bad sleep. Took him a while to adjust and recover. So he said that he's leaning on those experiences this week at the BMW Championship, where he could potentially get his first ever career playoff win.
Number one and number two sounding pretty relaxed as we run to the finish line. Thank you, Kira. Well, the LPGA Tour is at the home of golf this week for the season's final major, the AIG Women's Open. First round coverage begins tomorrow, 7 a.m. Eastern Time on USA Network. And we're joined now by someone who knows what it feels like to lift that Women's Open trophy, the 2004 champion Karen Stupples, who is on the call this week for Golf Channel. Karen, we often hear professionals say that they don't pay much attention to the venue or the history, that they're very much focused on the challenge of the week at hand and how to get the lowest winning score after 4 days. That doesn't seem to be the case this week in St. Andrews. It seems as though a lot of players are very much registering the significance of where they're playing this week.
No question about it. And I think for a lot of players, it takes them a couple of years to really get to appreciate what St. Andrews is. It certainly was the case for me. I've played it many times as an amateur, and then in 2007 I played it again. And at that point, I was just trying to get from point A to point B as efficiently as I could and try and plot my way around the course without really an appreciation for what it actually meant. And in subsequent years, every time I returned here, it really hit me just exactly what St Andrews is. And it's the home of golf and the home of a game that has given me so much. And I think when you look at the history involved with all the players that have been here and won championships on these fantastic links, it really kind of sticks home where you're actually playing. And I think for a lot of players, it really does hit home when you roll up onto the grounds and you see the R&A clubhouse, you see the 18th green there, and you go walk around the course, and you see the 17th and the road hole, and it all kind of really hits home that this was the birthplace of it for everybody.
Karen, how different is the experience on and off the course when the St. Andrews is playing host to an AIG Women's Open compared to other venues that are part of the Rota?
I think when you, it's just the history that's involved being here at St. Andrews. There are so many more photos taken. Everybody has the picture taken on the Swilcombe Bridge, by the clubhouse, just everything about it. They want to partake in the town. They want to go to the Dunvegan. They want to go to the Jigger Inn. There's all kinds of different things around here and the history that's involved with St. Andrews that really kind of whets a player's appetite for coming here. That's not to say that the other open Rota venues aren't too shabby either. I mean, you can think about Birkdale, Lytham, True, Muirfield, all in their own rights, fabulous championship links courses. But there's something just a little bit special about St. Andrews.
There's been some surprise this week, Karen, that Laura Davies has chosen not to have, a ceremonial farewell on the Swilcombe Bridge. But Katrina Matthew is doing that. She, of course, lives just across the Firth of Forth in North Berwick, a kind of a local hero. What has she meant to European women's golf?
Oh, I mean, she's meant so much. I think she was one of the most consistent players out there on the LPGA Tour, just consistently putting in results, being able to show players that you can make a living playing LPGA Tour golf in America. And she certainly did that to a high standard. Then to go ahead and win the AIG Women's Open too at Lytham and St Anne's just after she gave birth to her second daughter, Sophie, was pretty remarkable feat. And to have this goodbye just across the bay really is quite fantastic for her. Had a chance to talk to her yesterday about it, and I think she's pretty excited to play, but she's also really excited to sort of transition away from this as well. And she's a great friend of mine, and she's looking forward to being the captain of the Curtis Cup, which happens next week.
Karen, before we get to your short list of favorites for this week, another player saying goodbye at the end of the season, Lexi Thompson, and I guess we don't have a great gauge on beyond this AIG Women's Open in this season, how often she'll play in the future.
Mm-hmm. I think Lexi, honestly, women playing professional golf is hard at the best of times. And Lexi's been on this stage since she was 15 years old. It's just been a long journey for her. And honestly, she probably is just in dire need of a big mental break away from championship golf. And she's kind of done it in a way that she's left the door open, that she can come back and play some more events, ones that are near and dear to her heart. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see her play championship golf again. But I know that it can really take a toll on her. And I imagine that she's pretty excited about hanging up those clubs. And well, I think everybody who stops playing golf is excited about traveling without a set of golf clubs in tow.
There have only been a couple of British winners since you won, Katrina Matthew obviously being one of them, and Georgia Hall the other. Yeah. Charlie Hull has got to be considered one of the favourites this week, coming off a top five finish at the Scottish Open. She's been so close in so many major championships over the years, Karen. Do you think she's someone who ought to be on anyone's favourites list this week?
I think so, for all manner of different reasons. I think Charlie Hull is an exciting player to watch. She likes to go for it. She's not scared of the moment. And she kind of grabs that and wants to run with it too. And I think she's turned into a bit of a fan favorite on social media too. I think everywhere across the board, everybody's rooting for Charlie because she brings a little bit of personality to the table that in a lot of golfers don't have that same outgoing effervescence that Charlie seems to have on the course. So she has a chance to sort of bring everybody together into this as well. And her game certainly stacks up with the best in the world. Drives the ball well, iron shots are good, and putting, certainly her short game, she can certainly hold with everybody else. It's going to be a tough test, though, for this week for everybody. Players are going to have quite a bit of patience because the wind is going to be quite strong, and the old course plays particularly slowly just because of the nature of the double greens. Charlie's a quick player, so she needs to really, really stay patient out there.
It's amazing how big a splash she's made among the golf world, yes. Just comfortably being herself, but she's such a throwback in how she handles her day-to-day. So you mentioned Charlie Hull, you mentioned the conditions, the wind's going to be up. Certain style of player that will be favored considering all the elements.
I think somebody that that can really take the spin off their golf ball. Anytime you're playing in wind, less spin is always ideal. So some of those players that hit the ball a long way, that generate a lot of spin, are going to be at somewhat of a disadvantage. They're going to have to tone it down. They're going to have to get used to playing sort of 80% shots. So that's something that we've seen Nelly Korda do very well in the past. She's obviously not played particularly well the second half of the season so far, but she's very good at playing those take the spin off kind of shots. So somebody like Nelly, I think, could have potential here. Lydia Ko is on a bit of a heater as well. I mean, coming off the Olympic victory, she has a very good game for this golf course. She's so creative. She can play those little bump and runs. And that's something that the players will have to adjust to. Because of the high winds, the green speeds are only going to be rolling at about 9.5, which is insanely slow for championship golf. So these players are going to have to really come to grips and come to terms with that. And somebody who has a lot of imagination could really do well here. Lauren Coughlin, of course, coming off the victory last week in some tough conditions as well. She's pretty confident right now. So there's a whole manner of players who could potentially lift this trophy.
I want to go back to the conditions that you mentioned, Karen, because this year is a little bit different with the old course. We've never seen this in the men's open. They're actually going off split tees. And typically at St. Andrews, as you know, you play the first 7 holes downwind, and that's where you kind of make your money, and then you hold on the way back. Mm-hmm. But if you have players starting on 10 and they're playing into the teeth of the wind for their first 9 holes of their round, you know, that could be psychologically a little bit of a hurdle for some players to get over to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people were surprised to see the split tees, but we had that explained to us in our rules meeting just a few minutes ago, basically saying they're worried about daylight because we're quite a bit later in the season than we would normally be because of where the Olympics were positioned. So that's the reason for the split tees. It will definitely be something that the players will have to overcome, but everybody has to start on that 10th tee. I would say that the conditions tomorrow are supposed to be very challenging across the board. It doesn't matter what tee you're going to play from, you're going to have to face them at some point. I just hope that at the end of the week, there isn't one particular wave that it favours over the other, because that's always the way. You just want it to be somewhat fair, but links golf, it's very hard to do.
Karen, one final question as we let you go. You won in 04 at which venue? Wasn't it Sunningdale?
It was. Was it Sunningdale?
You list your Rota courses. How is that not on the short list of your 4 or 5? I think that would be number one.
Well, you know, it would be good if it would go back there. That would be my thing. They took the AIG Women's Open back to the Sunningdale area, but they chose Tom Abbott's course, Walton Heath, for it last time. So, you know, I mean, I can understand wanting to take it to where Tom plays, but, you know, I it would have been nice to have gone back to Sunningdale. But they are hosting the Curtis Cup next week, so that's going to be pretty cool to be part of that. But I don't know. I'd love to see it go back to Sunningdale again. It's just a fabulous course. I think anybody who's ever been there loves it. And so, yes, I am particularly partial to Sunningdale. So don't take that as I don't like it at all.
Just wanted to double check in case we had any concerned
viewers. Well, thank you for that.
No, you're working with Tom this week, so you can bring it up with him.
Yes,
have a great call. We'll be watching.
Will do. Thanks, guys.
Sunningdale gets my vote as the best course in all of England. And here's where you can watch the AIG Women's Open. Thursday and Friday, 7 a.m. Eastern Time on USA Network. It's the same over the weekend and then shifts to NBC at noon. Well, it was a tough week in Memphis for Rory McIlroy, one of the worst statistically of his entire career. He's off to a slow start in this year's playoffs, but as the tour moves to Colorado, we're going to check in with Rory as he looks to rebound ahead of Eastlake.
Flashback to 2022 and Tour Championship at East Lake. Rory McIlroy winning his third FedEx Cup title in comeback fashion, rallying from six behind then world number one Scottie Scheffler. Rory won the $18 million prize at the time, closing with a 4-under 66, becoming the winningest player in FedEx Cup history. Rory enters the BMW Championship this week, ranked fifth in the FedEx Cup standings. It goes Scottie, Xander, Hideki Matsuyama with that win in Memphis, jumped all the way up to third. Let's hear from Rory with Kira.
All right, Rory, 6,300 feet of elevation this week. So we know you for being a great driver of the golf ball. What is the launch monitor saying for the numbers?
The ball goes far here. Yeah, look, the longer clubs go along, the ball stays in the air for a long time. So launch monitor is saying I'm carrying my driver somewhere between 350 and 370 this week. So there's actually not a lot of opportunity to hit driver because of the way the course is set up. So there's a lot of fairway woods off tees. But I think the thing that's most impressive is like how far the irons go here. Mm. So like I won 90 on the last hole and hit 9-iron. You know, just I'm trying to get used to, you know, my 9-iron at sea level goes 160, 165. So just trying to get used to trusting that the ball is going to go a certain distance with a certain club. You know, it takes a little bit of time to get used to. But that's been nice. You know, I played 18 holes yesterday, you know, playing nine in the Pro-Am today. I'll do some practice after. And I think for me this week, it's just about really trusting these numbers and really getting dialed in with those.
And trusting Harry too, because it's a lot of work for
him. Yeah, it is. He's got numbers coming out of everywhere just because he's like, well, at this temperature, it goes this distance, but at that temperature, it goes that distance. And then somewhere in between, and it's like 10% here, but then sometimes 15%. And it's like a bell curve. So the shorter clubs don't get as much of the altitude, and then the mid irons get a lot, and then you go back to the low irons and they don't get quite as much because they don't go as high. So there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, so this is the difference between you and amateur golfers. You're thinking about temperature, meanwhile we're just trying to survive. Yeah. All right, so speaking of temperature, last week it was very hot in Memphis.
It was.
And it was a bit of a tough week. It was uncharacteristic for you.
Yeah.
So what happened last week?
It's been a long season. Probably mentally just checked out after a couple days, sort of looking ahead. You know, I think as well, I looked at the leaderboard and I knew I was only going to drop two spots at worst. So instead of coming in here in third, I'd come in fifth. And because the way the playoffs are structured, this week is important, obviously, but next week at East Lake is where everything really matters. And I think because of my record at East Lake and because I've played well there, I'm sort of like, if I can just stay within, you know, four or five shots of Scotty going into next week, I still feel like I'll have a chance. So probably not the best, you know, I wasn't the best mentally last week, but I was sort of just looking ahead to this week and then obviously to Atlanta as well. So probably didn't give it my best effort, but, you know, I'm ready for this week.
Well, when you think about the season as a whole, you said it's been a long season. For most people, it would be a great season. For you, it's something that has been something that you've been working through.
Yep.
Would a win, the FedEx Cup, or a great finish here to the season really flip the script on how you view the season?
Yeah, I think so. It would definitely make me feel better about the season. I don't know if it would take away the pain of what happened at Pinehurst.
Sure.
But it would definitely be a way for me to, like, close the book on 2024 on a positive note.
Yeah.
And I think as well, like, some of the play maybe at the Open and last week is probably still a little bit of the hangover of Pinehurst and sort of trying to come to terms with all of that. But yeah, I think a couple of good weeks coming up here, I'll feel a bit better about myself and the season as a whole as I look towards 2025.
What's the positive thought for this week?
I think I've always played well at altitude.
Sure.
I played well in Mexico. I've played well in Switzerland when I've played there. I've played well in South Africa. So I've always enjoyed playing at altitude and enjoyed what we were just talking about there of, trying to figure out how far the ball is going. And I feel like I can take advantage of the altitude quite a lot compared to some of the others because of how high I hit it. Mm-hmm. So I think just having positive vibes from playing in these sort of conditions before, I think is the positive note for the week.
Well, there's plenty of altitude here,
there
so you will get to enjoy the week.
Perfect, thanks.
Thanks for the time, Rick.